things are shutting down in the Dallas town square tonight.
You make it sound like it's just some small town.
Right.
Some small cowpoke town. Everybody's going home for the evening.
Shutter the doors.
Unhitching the horses from the hitching post.
Right.
Whatever
it
is.
Right, yeah. They've stumbled out of the saloon. The one that's in town. They paid their barkeep.
This is our third day at TIFF, which means it's our third driving and
TIFF?
Screaming.
Did you say TIFF or did you say
TIFF? TIFF. If I said TIFF, I'm sorry, but TIFF organizers, if you're listening,
right, next year, please
hit me up.
We definitely want to be there.
We want to cover everything. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so
we'll even pay our own way.
Don't offer that. Our third, stop. Our third night at TIFF, the fourth night of the festival.
Yes.
We scaled it back a little bit today. So we saw one film at the festival and one film, one new release, not at the festival, but at regular theaters. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, we can table Challengers for maybe the next episode, like full-fledged episode. Let's keep this TIFF centric, since they were so graciously nice to give us press passes.
Right. Well, and we're doing our part for that.
Right, we're doing our part.
We are providing coverage.
So tonight, we only saw one. There was a lot of documentaries today. There were a lot of, and there's some documentaries going on tonight. But I think we put in our time, and we've got a week ahead of us scheduled. We're taking tomorrow off, and we've got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to kind of wrap it all up. And so, pace yourself. This is like, if we were to give any advice to film festival goers, you don't have to see everything.
In fact, you can't see everything.
You can't see everything, so don't even try. And pace yourself. Know your limits.
Yeah.
I think tonight we did see two movies today, but a single
I do think that since you were talking about advice to film festival goers, because we're old hands at everything at this point.
right.
But I think we have done, we've talked about some of the bigger releases, but we've also sort of hit on some of these smaller ones that may or may not get distribution around here as well.
Right.
So I guess that would be like the other thing, is try to find those like small films that you might not get another chance to see. Like, you're gonna see I Saw the TV Glow out there.
Right.
Wanted to get it out of the way and talk about it and stuff, but those smaller films that might not show up anywhere.
And TIFF's an interesting festival for that too. I think I'm with you. I would normally have probably put I Saw the TV Glow on the back burner. Had there been really anything else that was truly interesting that I wanted to see, and that wasn't like we could have seen Deer Hunt 86, but that was full. Like, that was jam-packed full of, it was a local production. It had a ton of people that were, coming, that were part of the production. So that makes, like, not trying to figure a way to fit into that one. But yeah, I definitely think you should seek out the films that are more likely than not, you're going to have a hard time finding them after the festival. And you're going to find some that you're going to continue to like keep tabs on to see, oh man, when is this actually going to get released, or when is it going to be on streaming, or when can we possibly think of a theatrical release?
Right.
And tonight I think like this fits that bill. I think
yes.
This did win best. Like, it won something at TIFF.
At TIFF,
and I can't remember exactly which award that it won. But tonight we saw Solo, which is a story of Simon and Ollie. They are...
Don't give Ollie that much credit.
It's
Simon's
story. It's
not his story. It's Simon's story. Thank you.
It's Simon's story. And it's about... He's a drag performer in Quebec. I'm guessing Quebec. It was a French-speaking province in Canada. And he's just a sweet man.
Sweet, and a really good performer.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
A fantastic performer.
Before we get started, so he's a drag performer. Like, No. I was really whenever I see drag here in Texas, and drag here in Texas is a little bit, like, it's different than that. Like, it doesn't, like, and granted, I have not been to a full-fledged drag club that where it would be, like, and I don't know, I'm sure they exist, and I just don't know where they are. Like, if I'm not sure they exist in Fort Worth, let me just say that.
Because most of what we get here, are sort of like you could call them like pop-up performances.
Right.
You get drag brunches, you get drag events. But yeah, I'm with you.
I don't know. I don't think there's a dedicated like drag club. Right.
Right.
And I'm always like,
unless they have like regular performances at some of the gay bars around, especially like the south side and stuff.
Right. It's possible.
Or the near south side. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
But I was like, what they showed in Solo, I was really, really struck by like how amazing the costumes were, how amazing the performances were, and like I know it's played up for a movie, right? But I mean, like, it's just like Simon looked completely unrecognizable in drag. It was, and like the I'm always amazed at how they make the wigs look like it's actual hair.
Right.
And I know it's a weird thing to like to focus on, but I'm like, holy shit, that looks. I mean, like, you couldn't tell me. I wouldn't be able to know if like, that looks like real hair.
Right.
And kudos. And I know this makes me sound so fucking old and stupid and like and out of touch.
Well, I mean, this I think it's fair. I think it's a fair comment because look, I mean, I think we're completely willing to acknowledge that it's not our world.
Sure.
And so, we are. I think. I don't think surprised is the right word. I think impressed.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I think
yes.
In awe of.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, it makes us sound like old straight white
right,
guys.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, but and, you know, that's sure, and that's fine. But yeah, we can still be impressed with them. And I think we are. Sorry.
So Ollie has a pretty good family dynamic. Simon has a really good family dynamic. He's working as a regular in a drag club. His sister makes the costumes, and they've got a really great relationship that's very brother and sisterly. And
but it's also like really friendly.
Right, right. Yeah, it goes beyond.
Yeah.
Yes, they seem to be. Yes, right. Absolutely, genuinely friends. Yeah. And then this young. Handsome, I guess, upstart comes into the drag club, and it is named Oliver, and Simon and Oliver start a relationship together, and basically just turns to, I mean, like, Oliver is a piece of shit. Like,
He's narcissistic, right? He's gaslighting. He's all those things.
He jumps on Simon from a perspective of like Simon is. Like, would you say Simon's the star of the drag club?
He seems to be the main attraction, right?
Right.
You know, if not. Oh my God, what's Nathan Lane's name in Birdcage?
Oh shit! Yeah, I'm not gonna be able to pull that. Yeah, I know.
It's not to that level, but yeah. I mean, I think that out of the troupe, and the troupe seems to all do very well, like with the crowd. But it seems like Simon's like the headline.
He's definitely closing the nights out for the most part, right?
Yeah.
And so Ollie sees this. They start doing solo acts together. I'm sorry, they started doing duo acts together.
Which are like solo acts at the same time together.
Right, right.
So yeah, you're right.
It's like two solo acts at the same time. I don't know, I'm sure what word for that is.
And together.
Right.
Coordinated.
I don't think they come up with a word for it yet. But,
yeah, so Mr. like Miriam or Webster.
Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there to you. Take it on. Let's come up with a word for that phenomenon.
The word of the year will be.
So, and he starts basically gaslighting Simon and thinking that, you know, he's overly dramatic, he should not, and Oliver's cheating on him with another one of the drag performers. And makes Simon, forces him to say that he's okay with it when he's clearly not.
Right.
He starts separating him from his family, from his sister, from his friend, and Simon's mother is this famous opera singer.
Yeah.
In worldwide fame opera singer. And she's been mostly absent from Simon's life and the family's life, Maud, his sister as well, for 15 years. And she's coming back into town, and she's trying to, like, coordinate with her assistant, like, really, like, brief meetings with Simon and Maud.
Appointments, to, like, right? I mean, they're appointments. Yeah.
Yeah, she emails their father saying that she wants to have dinner with them, and Maud blows up. And Simon is, like, extremely excited to see her. Like, he's still enamored with and loves. I mean, like, you know, you get a sense that it's the same type of relationship that he has with Ollie.
It's
he's been gaslit into thinking that, you know, it's just
different type of toxicity, but
right. But she's just gone off to explore her career, and that would be the natural thing. To abandon her children is the natural thing
she's
to do.
She's an artist, right?
Right. So he has this, you know, this longing from a motherly perspective and a family perspective. He does actually meet up with her a couple of times, and there, well, he goes to see her at one point, and she cancels him, but doesn't cancel. She actually just doesn't come out to greet him.
Right.
They're supposed to have coffee together, and he thinks that they're going to have dinner afterwards. But she meets him for like 5 minutes just to hand off a gift.
And then she's like, I gotta go. I gotta have dinner with dignitaries.
And he comes out to see her perform with Ollie. And then once they go backstage, his mom and Ollie hit it off more. That makes sense. I mean, like, they're both the kind of same.
Right, the same types of people. And Ollie really monopolizes that conversation.
Right. And like, Ollie does it's a really good portrayal of that toxic relationship and that sense of gaslighting. And I think I think how it's portrayed and then Simon's like need for acceptance and continually going back into the relationship or letting himself be manipulated, not letting himself be manipulated, but being manipulated and right, coming back and not being able to separate himself from the relationship is a really good portrayal of how that really plays out a lot of times. Yeah, I thought it was really, really good. I thought the performances, I thought Simon was brilliant.
So good.
And the music is amazing. The actual drag performances, which normally I would kind of feel like I would feel like the film focused too much on that. I think it really did a good job of, like, I don't know why in this instance, but it felt like you're really getting a sense of, like, one, the dynamic between Simon and Ollie when they were doing their shows together, and also kind of Simon's persona and where he drew his strength and artistic,
And I think those two worlds are so closely aligned, like, for Simon and for everyone in that troupe. It's not just that they go in and, like, it's not just a job at that point, right? And it's closely aligned to, I think, how they also see themselves outside of the club, right? So
right.
Simon's also a makeup artist. And so that translates into how, you know, what they're doing kind of in the drag performance as well. So, yeah, I don't know that you could have had any less of the drag show in this film.
Right.
Right? I mean, so I think it worked really well in that. It wasn't like the boy band music in The Idea of You.
Right,
I'm like, I don't want to watch this. This, I was like, oh, this is really important, and this is integral to, I think, how the relationships play.
Right, right. And it seemed, I don't know, I appreciated what I would imagine is the more realistic portrayal of how it all goes. Like, this is not, and not to necessarily say anything negative about, like, Tu Wong Fu or Priscilla Queen of the Desert, but, like, this, everything here is just normalized, right?
Yep.
His family is totally okay with everyone.
That was awesome.
Homosexuality.
That whole scene was
right.
Great.
And even, you know, his mother. Like, I mean, I'm assuming they've known Simon was gay for quite a while.
Right.
But, like, yeah, they accept Oliver when he comes into the home to have brunch together. There's not a bat. There's no batting of the eye or, like, hemming and hawing or, like, there's no tension around the homosexuality in this film. There's just tension around a toxic relationship, which happens in all kinds of relationships.
Right.
So, I mean, like, this is, yeah.
I mean, and as we see, like, I mean, but, you know, in a romantic relationship and in a parent, you know, child relationship.
Right, right, right. At one point, Simon's mother comes to the drag performance, and of course, I mean, this movie is not without its, like, it's stereotypical, like, storytelling beats, right?
Yeah.
You know that he's gonna
fuck up,
falter in his performance.
I was watching through my hands. Watching through my fingers.
You knew Oliver was going to kind of monopolize, and, like, that, and part of the reason probably why he was wanting to go back to solo acts is in the case that she showed up. And yeah, I mean, like, so there's a big blow up. I think all of the performances and the way the story was told was really good. In spite of the somewhat traditional story that this would normally play out in.
I think we've talked about this before, where it's important for I guess we think it's important for, like, these stories, right? These LGBTQ films to also kind of have those traditional stories.
Right.
Right. I mean, so that it is normalized, or it's not just saying, like, it doesn't have to, I don't know, apologize for its queerness. Because I feel like a lot of times that's what...
Right.
Sometimes what it feels like, or that's how people perceive it, where it's like, oh, you know, sorry, this is a gay movie. And like...
Right.
But I just mean, like, this film doesn't do that.
And it also doesn't, like, try to take away from, like... Yes, it doesn't try to, like, put gayness in a normal, heteronormal situation. You know, this isn't, like, taking... And gender swapping, or
right.
making you know, When Harry Met Sally, a man, and you know, When Harry Met Mary, kind of thing. I don't mean to be facetious, no, totally, right, but like, right. When Gary met Harry, whatever. It's like, you know, it exists in its own world, which I think is also good,
yeah.
In the sense of we get an idea. There are differences; those can be, but but we're also telling the same kind of story. We all have. There are differences between us, but that we also all go through the same emotional bullshit.
Right, like, and we have this traditional narrative arc,
right.
our stories. Yeah, yeah. Back to what you said about the portrayal of this kind of relationship, I do like that it didn't rush into the toxicity.
Right,
it like took its time. Like, I knew it was coming.
Right, because we'd read the synopsis.
Right. Right. But I'm like... But I was kind of like... I'm just like waiting for it. It doesn't happen right away. And you
right. At the beginning, Simon actually blossoms in the relationship, right?
Yeah.
He tries
new things.
Right. And he kind of comes out as... comes out of his shell a little bit. Like, yeah, he's definitely branching out and trying... Like, he seems like his creativity is sparked by this new person.
And it's only when, like, Oliver says what he says to Maude, Simon's sister, that you're like, oh, here it comes. Right? Like,
right.
Here it comes.
Right.
Now we're going to start to see it. But it is, it's that slow build, which I think a lesser film would have jumped straight into it.
Right.
Right? They would have had, like, a great, like, couple nights, and then boom, it would have just gone, like, right into it. And not see, you know... How Simon, because I think that's the important thing, is you can see how Simon gets sucked into that, right?
Right.
Well, it'll go back to being like this, right? It'll go back to this. If I just say I'm sorry, we can get this thing back.
Yeah, and it's such a, Oliver's such a good portrayal of that trait,
yeah.
Of like being able to, I mean, the gaslighting is one on point, right? I mean, that's,
right.
He does that well as well.
Yeah.
But also the separation of the subtle separation of Simon from his family and from his friends.
Yep.
So there's a moment in the movie where Ollie and Maude, Simon's sister, are alone together, and he's like, "Are you mad about me taking away from you?" Like, he's blossomed since I've come into his life.
Right.
And Maude is kind of like, "I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I mean, like, you're not taking him away from me." And then there's a moment in the club where he starts to basically lie to Simon's friends about something he said or didn't say, but like bad-mouthing an elder drag queen, kind of a respected drag queen.
And right in front of Simon.
Right, and basically just says, "Hey, you said this," and he's like, I didn't say that.
I didn't say that.
And he's like, "Well, you know how you get when you're..." I mean, like, he didn't say this exactly, but the premise was, "Well, you know how you get when you're drunk."
Right.
You know how you're...
Right.
And
you always,
like,
talk shit when you're drunk.
I didn't. I'm sorry. You know. And then, and so he's, you know, they're setting the stage for the only person you can count on is me, and I'm the only person in your life, and and just basically a complete teardown of Simon. It really is. And like you said, it just, we don't jump there, and it's subtle, and it makes Simon's journey in this film all the more heartbreaking, because you know, we can all see it. Again, we've read the synopsis, we can all happening.
But I mean, but it's, you know, and it's I think it would be easy, again, like in a lesser film, you wouldn't be able to understand why Simon kind of keeps going back, right?
Right.
But in this one, you're like, I totally get it, and I recognize how this can actually, you know, how this works, like, in the real world.
Yeah, and you're, but we never, like, yeah, and it, like you said, we never, like, think of Simon as really, he doesn't come off across as pathetic, he just comes across as sad. Like, it's not, so the moment where, you know, the performance goes bad for his mom, and he basically blows up at everyone and kind of ruins his career at the moment, at least at that club.
At that club, yeah.
And, but then, like, they're arguing outside as he's gotten dressed and back in, and him and Ollie are arguing, and Ollie's like, fine, leave. And then closes the door, and he's like, wait, Ollie, I'm sorry. And then he keeps kind of, he keeps spinning around, right? He keeps leaving and coming back and leaving and coming back. Yeah,
it's, I mean, this is, we are quick to say, why would you stay in these relationships? Right, without considering how hard that actually is to separate from.
Right. Right.
How hard it is to get yourself out of those situations.
So. Yeah, because you're expected, you assume that, like, it's not only, like, just logistically hard, right? I mean,
right.
Ollie's probably living with him at this point. You know, it's, you know, he's obviously they're working together. And, you know, it's, I mean, it is a complete upheaval. It's of your life, you know?
Yeah. This film is also, like, really gorgeous to look at.
Yeah.
It's one of the few that I feel like we've seen in a while where I'm like, every choice that director made, you know, framing, color, composition, camera movement, I was really into. Like, I mean, there's a scene where they're dancing in the club and it's, like, pitch black, and then we get, like, these harsh, like, direct lights, and then it kind of fades out. Yeah. I thought that was incredible. Almost like slow strobe lights, right?
Right. Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. And the colors in this, I think, are really good.
This, yeah.
And the costumes, man.
Well, and, like, the MC is great too.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so, like, the couple this with, like, do a double feature with this and Killing of a Chinese Bookie. Like, it's like.
Yeah. But just for the MC.
Right. But the MC's so good in this. And it feels like cabaret in a way, right? I mean, it feels like you've got Joel Grey up on the stage. Although Joel Grey was never, like, really, like, stand-up comedian-esque type stuff.
Right.
I think all of the... And I do think, like, the... Like, showing the eclecticness of, like, each of the drag performers and how...
And the different ages.
Right, yeah. It was... It is definitely an interesting, like, look into that world, in addition to having this story that flows through it.
And again, like, fully admitting that it's not our world, it felt authentic.
Yeah.
I mean, it really felt sort of, like, lived in and worn and understood by the filmmakers.
Whereas something, I don't know if Birdcage does for me, like, right?
Right.
That feels like that's a...
You're saying Hank Azaria's portrayal?
No, I meant actually of the club itself. Atticus.
Agatha? What? Wait.
Agatha's,
Spartacus?
Spartacus, yeah. Whatever. Have you seen that? Have you seen the behind-the-scenes Simpsons? It was with James Lipton, and it's the cast of the Simpsons, like, doing the Simpsons voices.
Oh, no.
It's bonkers, amazing how,
because, like, of Hank Azaria.
Well, no, all of them. Like, one, seeing seeing Nancy Cartwright do Bart.
Oh, sure.
Is just, like, it's weird how her, like, these characters just come out of their voice. It's fun to see. Bob's Burgers is funny too, but mainly because all of those people are so funny. Like, the Simpsons characters, they're not, like, they're all funny, but they're not, like, they're not improvisational.
Right. No,
like,
those cats.
But the Bob's Burgers people are just incredible. But so, yeah, listening to, like, and of course, Linda's voice by a man, and so seeing him do Linda's voice is, like, it's really, really funny. And I don't know, like, also, like, dopey characters. So I forget the guy's name in Bob's Burgers, but his best friend, who's, like, the electrician or whatever, who's always there. Just seeing someone do that, those types of voices that are kind of, like, dumb voices, they are really funny to me for whatever reason. Have you ever heard, so speaking, and also this another, like, because we're kind of running out of, like, talking about Solo just a little bit. We still got some time to get home.
Yeah, that's right. Because remember, we are driving in a car, which is why it sounds like we are driving in a car.
Right. We're screaming on the road, baby.
That's right. Screaming on the road, driving while screaming, screaming while driving.
Have I talked to you about the H. John Benjamin piano album that he did?
No.
So, I think it's just called H. John Benjamin Plays the Piano, and I could be wrong, but there's a, but he does not play the piano. Like, he doesn't know how to play the piano. And so, there's an opening skit where he's with Christian Schaal, and he's, like, going to the devil, and she plays the devil, and he's like, hey,
that makes sense.
I want to sell my soul to learn how to play the piano, because I've got this gig coming up. And she's like, well, that's not how it works. You got to have at least a little bit of talent that I can work with. And so he, like, walks away disappointed. But for this album, he hired a professional jazz band to play jazz songs while he just, like, improvises on the piano, and he can't play, and it sounds like, okay, that's a 5-minute bit. It is really, like, actually pretty compelling to listen to the entire thing. It's funny
as shit.
I'm gonna
have to find this.
But yeah, it's like, one, because the jazz band is great, like,
sure,
but he, like, tries to scat a couple times, and, like, it's just, like, playing. It's so funny.
Imagine the sort of confidence you have to have, the nerve you have to get up there and do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And just, like, no shame, and just know that you're going to, like, sound horrible or try things that aren't going to work. You just have to go with it.
Right. And he's just plinking along while these guys are just playing
just riffing
beautiful
there,
music
yeah.
behind him. And it's like a 30-minute thing. Like, it doesn't go on forever. Because, I mean, he knows the limits of the bit.
Because the second side of the album is him. It's him reading The Great Gatsby.
Right, yes. Boy Kills World is not getting good reviews, by the way.
I know you wanted to see that.
I will
see it, but yeah. It's, I mean, I don't know. Is that, like, based off of a comic book or anything? Because it kind of looks like
it does look like one,
or
yeah.
like a graphic novel, or
I'm not sure. I need to look more into these,
or anime. I don't know. Maybe.
All these films that we've gotten since John Wick has become popular are these Silent Night and, like, Bullet Train, and some of them work. Like, Nobody, I think, with Odenkirk worked.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Odenkirk makes that work.
Yeah.
Right? He's so good. Like, he's.
Like, did Monkey Man work for you?
Not really.
I know.
I think it was a ridiculous mistake to compare it to John Wick.
I know.
And one, did you see what you saw?
I saw Monkey Man.
Okay, so
yeah.
The thing that floored me about Monkey Man, and I know this is not Diff, so Diff, we apologize. We're digressing. We talked about Solo.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Is that once he's, like, going back to do the fights again, like, after he's, like,
right,
he paints his monkey mask white,
but never puts it back on.
No, he puts it on once and then immediately pulls it off and like throws it to the ground.
Okay. Because I'm like, wait, where did the white mask go?
Right. No, he walked.
Like, why
did you
bleach it?
He walked for like 2 seconds, pulled it off, and threw it down, and never turned it back on.
I
was just like, that is a weird message to be portraying, right? Is that we're just gonna, like, we're just gonna beat the shit out of everybody. Like, I don't know. I understand, but, like, in India, and this is, you know, in response to, it seems very much in response to, like
Modi's.
Yes, yeah, the current, like,
regime.
I don't know how you want to call it. It's not
feel like a government.
Right. This demonization of a certain religion, right?
I couldn't quite get, like, the. I know that there was some, like, anti-Muslim stuff.
Right.
Like, from, like, you know, the opposition party, but that message, I think, was sort of lumped in with, like, lots of other displaced people.
Yeah.
And I don't know enough about, like, current.
I do think
India's socio-political to know, like, the different sort of.
Well,
I guess Sikhs probably too, right? Some Muslim Sikhs.
Yeah. I think this movie owed more to showing that, to be honest.
I know.
This is a movie made for Western audiences. This is not a. I mean, like, I'm sure it plays well, but this is not a Bollywood film. There's no song and dance.
No.
So I don't. So, like, I feel like they should have spent a little bit more time explaining
or showing us more.
Right, because ultimately this is a revenge story. Again, like, you know, it's just, I mean, Dev Patel's mom gets slaughtered by a corrupt cop.
Working for, like, this big kind of...
Right, another, like, kind of
spiritual
mafioso.
Spiritual leader, but really, like,
Right,
like a crime lord, really.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like at this stage, we've seen that and we've done that.
Yeah, so if you're not going to really center it around this different political situation, then you're just making...
And also, like, it marketed itself as kind of like a Indian blood sport more than anything else,
Yeah.
And so, like, the visuals that you get in the trailer really don't play out.
No.
Like, it's not like, I mean, it's not like he's a great fighter. He just gets the shit beat out of him.
Well, and, like, he throws the fight, right?
Right,
so, yeah.
So, I mean, and I will... I know that they're action fans, and I know we've moved beyond, like, the 1980s, which I think maybe we shouldn't have, but, like, well...
Oh, wait. Oh, so you want to go back to, like, the Iron Eagle, Iron Eagle jingoism?
No, I'm talking about McTiernan and
Ronnie Reagan.
I'm talking about Die Hard and, like...
I got you. Your quippy kind of, like...
Yes.
Actual interesting, like, everyman character.
Look, most of those were shit, but there were a handful of them that were worthwhile.
Right.
For every Predator and RoboCop and Die Hard you have, you still have, like, Invasion USA and, like, and all of the other shitty, one-off direct-to-video.
Like Red Dawn?
Hey, I love Red Dawn. Red Dawn's awesome. Like, that's a good movie.
Wolverine.
Leah Thompson and Jennifer Grey in the same
film.
Oh, my
God, I know! I just sounded like a complete idiot.
But, like, these fight sequences, like, I get the fight choreography. I feel like the fight choreography is good, but it's so similar. Like,
yeah.
So I don't know if, like, thump-thump-thump, like, thump-thump-thump, right? And then we move each other around, and then hyper, you know, cuts.
But we're close up, so
and
we
I,
can't
and I, then
see.
I smash your head up against something, and then, like, to me, I think the interesting, like, next evolution of this is to show this realistically. Like, show someone, like kind of like Love Lies Bleeding, but I know that wasn't realistic because she turns into a gigantic
Giant,
Hulk lady. But, like, show, like, let's see
somebody's
actual...
jaw coming unhinged and...
Yes. No, I mean, like, yeah, someone dying because they got their head smashed into a bathroom sink.
Right.
And now they've got a slow bleed. I know that's not it's not an interesting, like...
No, but right, like, all of these...
I don't know why this bus is creeping, man. This is a...
Apparently the bus wants to take up two lanes. That's fine, Mr. Bus.
It's not in service.
Hey, Mr. Driver Man.
Now we really are screaming while driving.
That's just my violent femmes, like, reference for the name. But yeah, I mean, these fight scenes where somebody would clearly be concussed, if not dead, right? And have internal bleeding.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, like, the fight scenes in Monkey Man are no different than the fight scenes in John Wick.
There are
no different from the fight scenes that were going to be in Bullet Train. So, like, all of, and, like, Argyle and all of these, like, I'm going to take a book and I'm going to smash it and I'm going to do, and I guess, I don't know, I hesitate to be too critical. But they're just so rote and similar
now
that, like...
It's like a plug and play.
Right, right. We're going to have a... It's, everything's so fast and kinetic that, like,
yeah.
Like, to me, like, give me more fight scenes, kind of like... And I hate to, like, prop this series up too much, but, like, Henry Cavill in the Mission Impossible series.
Sure.
Where
yeah.
he's, like, just a... I want more fisticuffs. I want more badassery. And I don't need, like... dance. I want
the moment where he reloaded his arms.
Right, right. So cool.
So awesome.
So fucking cool.
That was
right?
So awesome.
But, like, stuff like that, like, I mean, and, like, also just give me variation. I don't mind
brawlers.
I don't mind seeing the kinetic energy of a well choreographed fight. But again, I don't necessarily need to see, like, Sam Rockwell and Brad Pitt and Dev Patel and all these 115-pound guys all doing the exact same thing, right? And just rocking the shit out of everybody who's around in the room.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like a really weird complaint, but, like, it's just...
There was no fisticuffs in Solo.
No punches. Some glasses being thrown.
Yeah. Well,
And I did think there might be, you know, it looked like he was going to stab him with a broken bottle. I thought that was going to be, all right, we're going to see some shit.
I know.
But highly recommend. I think Solo is probably the best thing we've seen so far.
Yeah, I think so, actually. I do.
And this is the type of film that I go to film festivals to see, right?
Yeah.
Is that the thing, like I said, we probably won't see an American release of this. It'll end up on Fandor or Mubi at some point.
It's represented. I mean, it's a music box film.
Yeah, true.
So who knows? I mean, there could be.
Right.
But I mean, I think a film like this, a film like We Strangers too, is the type of film that I
tend absolutely.
To seek out at these things. So, I do think so far though it's been the best. And the most well-made as well.
Yeah.
So I know that those two things might sound like they're the same, but I think you understand what I mean.
Right.
From like a technical aspect.
Yeah.
Really cool. Really cool. Like you said, we're taking tomorrow off and going back Tuesday.
So enjoy your Monday. Hopefully your week starts off well.
Yeah. I mean, I know that you'll miss our voices.
But we have episodes.
This will come out Monday anyway. So,
right.
So you can enjoy that.
And we've got basically five, maybe films, maybe six at the most left. So I don't think any day we also have a panel on the state of theater. So we'll report on that as well. I'm interested to see what they say.
I am too.
Explain
yourselves.
Maybe they'll be giving out theaters.
Hey, there you go. We'll have to make sure that we are the first ones through the door. Heard there was a door prize.
You guys got a swag bag or something?
I got a swag bag full of theaters and licenses.
Right. Here's half a mil and a theater for you guys to run.
Way to go. Enjoy yourselves. Cool.
Sweet.
All right. We'll talk to you in the next couple of days.
Sounds good. We'll see you. Right.
Bye.
You have been listening to Why Does the Wilhelm Scream with your hosts, Brock and Jason. If you liked today's episode, do us a favor and rate, review, and subscribe in whatever application you use to consume podcasts these days. You can reach us by visiting whydoesthewilhelmscream.com. If you are in the DFW area, we would love to see you at a Fort Worth Film Club event. You can learn more about those and find a full schedule at fortworthfilmclub.com. And you can learn about my foundation and how we are trying to foster the next generation of film lovers at realhousefoundation.org. That's REEL housefoundation.org. Till next time.